it's Samila from Menswear by Woman podcast. Welcome to another episode. So today's episode, I must say, I'm so excited to talk to my guest who is based in the States. What they do is they repair clothing, and it's a bit like what we have here as well. The brand is called Raw Meat and Repair Company, and his name is Rafael Flores. I'm going to say it so wrong. Flores Contreras. Oh, did I say it wrong?
Very beautiful and British. I love it.
Welcome to Menswear by a Woman podcast, Rafael. It's absolutely lovely having you on board.
Samila, it's an honor to me. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So I've been asked by loads of people to get you onto the podcast. They say that you do amazing work, amazing repair, amazing alterations, everything, where you actually make sure that clothes are not in the landfill. They don't end up there. And I'd like to know a bit about how you got into this.
Well, you can't really believe those groupies, you know.
So how did it all begin, though, Rafael? The raw meat.
Well, you know, I'm just an immigrant who came here over 20 years ago. Right. You know, I'm right now 43. I came here when I was 20. Okay. So that's 23 years ago to New York. And, you know, I'm at 20. I basically had a beautiful 10-year-old mind, innocent, naive, completely new. I mean, you know, I was raised traditionally in a very traditional household in Peru, in Arequipa, in the south of Peru, darkest Peru, as many British probably know. And I don't know, just basically went to the design school, and just my whole universe changed. I came to New York to do that, to study design and to learn more about like the city itself. I'm mesmerized. And New York City always mesmerizes you the first time.
Yes.
With the glitter, the glam, and grim. And then, you know, kind of like eventually ask you for paying rent and paying bills and paying that. So you have to meet ants.
Yeah.
How did I end up in this is because, you know, when I went to fashion school, I started working the first 8 years of my life for this very entrepreneurial guy from Hong Kong. His name was Mr. Sang, which basically was the kind of like the biggest impression I ever had in my life. You know, I was, you know, let me tell you, I came to college and I basically started working in a wholesale watch company. So this company was basically doing wholesaling different watch brands. You know, they were dealers with different brands, and I was basically being a salesperson. I will basically finish work, which was very close by my school, and then I run into classes, and then obviously there will be, you know, a dead time while I was waiting or doing anything. I will start basically opening the watches with the tools and looking at the movements.
Oh wow!
And, you know, I was very curious about the movements, whether they were quartz or mechanical. And, you know, I just basically got submerged on that. And that called the attention of Mr. Sang. And he asked me to, you know, to work for him. Now, at that moment, I didn't know how much he was traveling because he basically had diverse business.
Okay.
You know, he was doing watch production, then he got jewelry, then he got furniture. Businessman, you know, through and through, all over. And he asked me to come over. So he trained me. He trained me because eventually after the training that he gave me on all the stuff that he needed, I had to basically create a storyboard to give him on top of every single trend, everything what was going on, you know, whether it was jewelry, fashion, watches, accessories. And every time he will come back to New York, which at the time I was already in charge of the office here in New York, basically giving a presentation of everything. You know, that lasted eight sweet years, and you know, my undying love for watch is still there. I'm a huge watch fan.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously the recession fell off, and Mr. Sam basically said, okay, come to Hong Kong. And I was like, well, listen, I kind of like invested my time and my efforts here. So, and my mom is here, my sister is here, and I have to decline. You know, he said, like, you know, whenever you can, if you want to be in Hong Kong, let me know. We'll be waiting for you. Okay. So I basically stay here in New York. And it was tough. It was tough because also I lost my student status.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I basically had to figure it out, meet ends, but always kind of like thinking, you know, that that era, that time, you know, also you have to think that, you know, I was 20 years old. I got this amazing job and I basically haven't really experienced anything because it's been always work, mm-hmm. work. And, you know, I was extremely interested in the underground scene in New York. You know, you have like that, especially the music scene, which was very interesting to me. And then I started doing photography. So around 2004, 2005, I basically worked with Mr. Sang in the morning, afternoon, noontime, and then I will basically go ahead, have dinner, and go do start documenting the underground scenes in New York, underground parties, underground rock and roll concerts, you know,
wow.
You name it. I actually start like, you know, hanging out with the Strokes and the JAS and LCD Sound System, but there were nobody here in New York. There were just a band, a local band that they were playing. Obviously, they were telling me that, you know, they were having sold out shows in the UK, for example, while in here they were merely having a hard time like filling a room.
Wow.
So, you know, and I was basically like doing pictures after parties. And as I said, you know, there was at the time also a very famous party called the Mishapes here in New York. I was there too. And, you know, I was mesmerized by, you know, how colorful the statement of the expression of people is in New York, you know, from all kinds of walks. You know, everybody has his own statement. That's how I see it. Fashion is basically not mandated by the brand that you buy,
no.
but the style.
Yeah.
But how you put things together, how do you, you know, it's your statement, it's a personal statement. So, you know, I was always like into that. And, but at the same time, working for the industry for over 20 years, you notice also how wasteful it is.
Yeah.
How much, especially working with luxury brands, you know that, you know, if stuff that doesn't sell, they basically throw to the landfill. And don't get me started with fast fashion brands, which, you know, just horrible. It's New York,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
There is so much opulence and so much waste.
Unbelievable how much waste there is in this trade.
Yeah. And you know it better. Yeah. You said you saw it in India.
Yeah.
South America too is huge.
It's just huge, frightening.
Then you have the huge patch of plastic.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
I'm so against plastic. I'm so against all this waste. So, well, I was basically working at Denim Therapy, where I started doing denim. I start finding ways to, you know, do repairs. And now, yeah. Denim Therapy, the workshop at the time was this little workshop where, you know, all these brands will come over to, you know, sew their projects, create patterns, and like, you know, talk about repairs and all that. That opened a huge window, an opportunity to me, because I started like talking to very knowledgeable people in the denim industry.
Right.
And, you know, I felt extremely ignorant. And so I spent 8 years of my life in that workshop, basically going through all the stuff that people were, you know, forgetting or leaving. And I was basically looking at the fibers because people were telling me, oh, you have the right hand, left hand, broken twill, you have herringbone, all the ways you can weave denim, all the weights, all the origins, organic, salvage, non-salvage. I mean, it was a whole world. I thought it was just blue and blue, period. And it was so much more. So, you know, I get obsessive when I start something and I start like trying to get and you know, delve deep as much as I can in order to, you know, at least have a decent conversation with somebody that knows more than me. So that was basically how I started, because this company were doing repairs and we were doing a lot of beautiful stuff, because there were, you know, that was the beginning kind of the journey. I started like getting involved with the creative process and start telling them what could they do with their clothing, with their beloved jeans. That's when I got the idea that, you know, American people do care about their clothing and they have a beautiful relationship with their jeans.
It's true, though, because I think we all have this beautiful relationship with our jeans, whoever wears them, you know, and you don't want to see it in the landfills. I think for the past few years, I think a lot of people realized during the lockdown that you don't really have to buy clothes so much. You know, I think because I know my friends have, they've all like saying, you know, I've got so much clothes that I can alter or get it altered or repaired. And I said, exactly, I've been telling you that. So you don't have to constantly buy these clothes every single time something doesn't fit. You can go and get it altered. You know, I've said all this. But they didn't realize this. And it's like, I think the whole conception of that, you know, clothes aren't there to be thrown away after being worn after 2 or 3 days. I think it's growing. I think the industry has had this massive shake-up, realizing that the consumer isn't just going to buy anything anymore. You know, they're not going to go out there and say, oh, I'm just going to buy it because of the sake of buying it. There are loads of people, I'm sure in the States they're doing this, but in UK, they're finding out, you know, there's a lot of things like, you know, where is it made, who's made it, you know, do I need it, can I live without it, have I got something that I can do alteration on it and make sure it lasts for a long time. And I think that's happening already, it's starting to happen a lot more because they're much more aware. You know, and it's nice to hear that people like yourselves have come into this trade in a sense to save us from all this, you know, save us from buying so much that we don't really need, you know?
No, I 1000% agree with you, 1000%. And I think I just came to this realization when I started Raw Meat, because, you know, that every single experience prior to Raw Meat basically has complemented and helped the experience and basically curated what we do today. You know, I feel that, yes, the consumer, especially, you know, thinking about like the young consumer, is much more conscious of their decisions, you know. Just to put an example, which actually it fills me with hope, is the fact that in New York City, and I live in Bushwick, I live in Brooklyn, right? So there is this train called the L train. People call it the hipster train because it's full of all these kids basically coming, swarming into my neighborhood because we have a lot of thrift shops here. Wow. As a matter of fact, around the corner of my house, you have the biggest thrift shop in the whole city. It's a block big, you know? And you see all these kids, and that's basically just one. We have like at least five or six different thrift shop places, and they're always packed with young kids. I myself basically go there also to get my clothing or pieces that I actually like try to hunt down or do a safari on clothing, because, you know, I like to keep my skills sharp, so I kind of like reconstruct. And some customers ask me, they asked me to, you know, give them a piece for them. And I was like, you give me creative license, let you do whatever you want. And I just basically go out there, like, you know, get something that is old. You know, I do the process of cleaning it, making, and then I start, like, you know, adding patches or deconstructing something. I usually know the measures of my clients, so I just start, like, customizing to their body, to their measures. And 99.9%, you know, they actually, like, very much are into what I create. And, you know, it's something that also makes me feel very good, because on top of everything, patches or trims or everything is salvage. You know, I usually get patches from, you know, vintage lots, or I get, for example, my leather trims or whatever I use. It comes from basically factories here that they finish their productions, and they throw that material, you know, and it's precious. So I just basically, like, salvage that, and I just incorporate, you know, I create a sort of like a universe of mosaics with colors and materials and contrast. I don't know, I just feel like the journey that I'm doing right now is because of my experience that can mold and shape me into what I'm doing today.
I think you're right. So with the alterations in the States, in New York, do you get a lot of people doing alterations and coming to you now?
Well, you know, it's been a very bumpy road, I have to say, because, you know, I started this basically a little bit over a year. I started on November 2022. So my Christmas of that year was a little bit much more different than the Christmas that I passed this year, year later.
Okay.
I'm saying that, of course, I grew up a little more. I'm basically doing better than that moment, that year. But yes, I mean, there it's increasing. There is definitely more awareness. I mean, I'm talking to you, so I guess I'm creating some waves around.
You are, because I've had few people asking me to get you onto the podcast. So there must be a reason why they're asking me. It's because they say that you do such amazing work.
I put my heart. I really put my heart, and I put my all the passion that I have on clothing onto every project. I take it very personal. If you come tomorrow and you tell me that, you know, this is the jacket of your dad, and it's gone, and you want to revive it, I will figure out a way to do it and make it yours.
Wow. How do you do it, though? How do you, I mean, if a clothing is in such a bad condition, and somebody comes to you and says, you know, it's a very sentimental piece, how do you fix it? How would you go about fixing it? Obviously, depending on what's wrong.
First of all, you have to understand that you have to, if it's an heirloom piece, like the one we're talking, right?
Yeah.
You have to understand that there is a structure on this piece. You have, and the structure has to be, first of all, reinforced. Maybe the certain parts of the fabric are running thin. So maybe in this way, probably you want to kind of like go and use some sort of like Japanese philosophy on this, right? Mm-hmm. You have the way of sashiko works. Now you add patches here that has, like, you know, hand embroidery or hand sewing, but creates a beautiful mosaic around the piece, this beloved piece, you know. Everything goes, again, with the allowance of the customer or the allowance of the client. You start explaining, you start saying, well, this is what I would like to do. What do you think? It's a process between you and me to create at the end a piece that, you know, you want to wear again, because it's reloaded. It's the new version of this jacket, you know. I learned that, for example, at Belstaff. Because we're talking about a jacket that is being selling the same jacket for over, 70 years?
Yeah.
The Trial Master.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the Trial Master of the first edition is not the Trial Master of today, because it has been innovated. It has been improved, you know. And that's my way of thinking, you know. If the elbows didn't have at that moment of this jacket, you know, pads, well, there are beautiful leather pad you know, elbow pads that could go beautifully on that jacket, if that's the case. Or we can actually figure it out another way, maybe a twill, maybe leather. There's always a way, you know, if the edges of the jacket are frayed, then you actually put a beautiful, beautiful trim around that not only looks amazing, but also, you know, reinforces. The same thing with colors. You're just creating a piece. It's a blank canvas,
yeah,
you know, waiting for you to recreate in a better version.
So, Rafael, has there ever been a garment that's come in for alterations that you could not do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I they call me the patron of lost causes and cases, but there are limitations. And, you know, my creativity just go just as far. Because it's not really creativity, but it's, you know, I just can't do it. The other day, a good friend of mine also, a client, well, my clients ended up being my friends just because we start getting these conversations about their garment, yeah, and their wardrobe.
Yeah.
And but he brought me this jacket that he found in the attic of his grandfather. It's a beautiful, beautiful 1940s leather jacket.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing patina. And it's oh my God, this is just so beautiful. And, you know, it's very salty. And you know this jacket has gone through lengths and it has a story. But unfortunately, it's completely dry. So whatever I touch, it starts basically, you know, disintegrate. And it's so sad, you know. I always try my best. But, you know, if I put a stitch there, it's going to break everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just politely told him that, you know, frame it.
True.
But, you know, the only way you can preserve this jacket is by, you know, framing it. Put it in a beautiful frame and tell, this is my grandfather's jacket.
I've seen that. I've got my grandmother's one of her saris, right? One of her saris, and it's in tissue silk. It's actually in tissue silk, and it's like one of those silks that it's a very luxury silk. And my mum got it.
Wow.
My mum came with it when she came into England for the first time ever. She had it with her for her mother's sari. And it's such a beautiful fabric. It's already started to get little holes, which I was like, oh no, this has got, you know, you've got to be careful. But Mum said it's already had holes. But this is the most beautiful silk I've ever, ever, ever seen. The embroidery work on this sari is absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And you know how you're saying, frame it. I'm thinking to myself, I need to do that. I need to do that because I've never worn it. Mum's never worn this sari. So we've always kept it in tissues. So we've actually packed it up in tissues to keep it, you know, keep it as possible as well as we can. But thinking about it, I think that's the oldest thing I've got in the house is my grandmother's sari. And it's absolutely beautiful craftsmanship on it. Beautiful craftsmanship.
Frame it.
I have to now. I've got to frame it now because otherwise I'm probably end up. I just have this horrible fear a moth will get onto it. You know, because if a small little moth goes in,
way to do it safely so moths don't get into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you can, you know, figure it out. Add like pieces of wood. You know, cedar usually does the trick. Into the frame, so you know it preserves. Because one of the things also, if you have such a beautiful piece, is you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And by touching it or by handling it, it might actually keep breaking it even more. Maybe by framing it, you can have a way to not only you, but you know, if you have children or your whole family gets to enjoy work that goes into making a silk garment.
Rafael, how did the name come about, raw meat? Could you possibly, I've been wondering, how did he get to this name? I really would love to know. How did you get to this name, raw meat? Because it says raw meat repair company.
Yeah.
And you think, I can understand the reason for it, but what is why call it raw meat?
Okay, so tell me first,
Well,
what's
I think
your
it's
idea?
myself, the lever that you work on, the lever that you also do alterations. That's what I'm just thinking, maybe it's to do with that. The rawness of it, and the meat is like what, a massive, powerful part of, I don't know. I'm talking load of rubbish, most probably. you got me there, actually. And this is the first time ever I'm actually quiet.
The whole name really evolved, invokes a lot of inspirations for every person that I ask. First of all, I told you I was involved in the denim industry, so raw denim was a huge thing for me, right? And back then, talking about more than 10 years ago, I always thought the raw standard for Raphael's artisanal workshop, for example, But that was originally what, in my mind, 10 years ago, what raw stand for. So I created already a connection with the raw denim fabric by calling raw as Raphael's artisanal workshop. But then, everything evolves, everything changes. I had this customer. I had this customer. It was like this guy. He was actually from England. He was in Portsmouth, in the UK. He will come to New York to see me, but he will come and he will have all these ideas in his mind, and you could see the ideas through his eyes, and I have all these kind of tools that I was provided, and he was like, okay, look, so let's engrave this, let's do that. Why don't we I don't know taper or like fix it or and he will come here for like let's say a week, and by the time he will leave, I will basically have everything, all his garments done, and he affectionately referred to me as his personal butcher. He said, you are my butcher, Mike, with his accent. I'm sorry about my British
No,
accent, but it's the closest thing that I can imagine, And, but he trusts me. He trusts me with, with his garments, which he called the garments chops. So, and basically he was saying that, I was cutting his chops with a precision as if it was a piece of meat. He used to fantasize. He used to tell me, make it. One day you will open your own workshop and you're gonna be showing pictures on Instagram saying, "Oh, I butchered this garment." But I said to him, "Carl, I mean, butchering has a kind of like not really nice connotation." I thought he was like, "Fuck it, man! I mean, this is amazing. Nobody has done it. You're butchering something. You're the butcher, man. You're gonna chop stuff and people is going to understand that chopping is actually good. And you are butchering this." You're butchering my clothing. And I'm like, so that idea, and I just kept thinking about that. Carl also was a huge inspiration of this journey.
So that's how it all began.
So basically when I was thinking about the name, I was like, well, something, tongue in cheek, something that basically has nothing to do with it. And I wanted always the word raw. Because of my inspiration with that connection with that time of the raw denim. And then I said raw meat, because I'm the butcher, and then it came to me, a lot of people said, but meat, there's a lot of vegan people, or there is a lot of vegetarians, they're not going to come to you. And I said, like, let's put meat, because meat doesn't necessarily means to have to be beef. It could be anything, any kind of meat, even the meat of the fruit, meat, raw meat. And plus, there is honesty in raw. There is a straightforward understanding that this basically one solid product. There is nothing around. It's raw. It's raw meat.
Well, I must say it does really stand out though. It because it gets you thinking, raw meat. Repair company. Okay. What they're about? So it has worked. It really has worked. So he's done quite, he's actually given you a great name in a sense. You know, you're the butcher of clothing, you know?
There you go. You're the butcher. Oh, Carl Polly, if you're listening to me, thank you, mate.
So, what do you think that at the moment with the industry, the way it is?
Well, it's unsustainable. As I told you, 20
Yeah.
years in this industry taught me that there is no need for any other brand, any other label. There's no need. There is so much,
There is, yeah, there is.
Me myself, I've been always kind of like entertaining the idea of trying to make my own clothing. I mean, that's usually the organic, the natural call that you get. When are you going to start doing your own clothing? I'll buy it from you. It's not, it amuses me a lot because why not? But I'm not helping. I'm not contributing with a problem if I'm doing that. If
No.
you think about it,
Yeah, if you think of, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Plus, there are a lot of beautiful clothing out there with amazing, amazing craftsmanship
Yeah.
and quality that are forgotten. That you could just basically clean it up, restructure it. You know what? I'll put my name in that because I fixed it. I transformed it. I said many times lately, that, and believe me, I basically started this company with basically every single savings that I had. I went through thin throughout that Christmas of last year because I wasn't able to meet ends,
Yeah.
and slowly I lived on rice and beans, sometimes only rice for weeks in order to keep going with this
Wow.
idea, with this dream, with this goal that I have. And through that, I feel like if I ever had to have the opportunity and I have the means and the money to invest on something, I will invest in technology for patches, for example. But really, really nice, curated, beautiful patches. Because a patch not only like fixes a problem that you have in a garment, but it also adds to your garment. Elevates your garment in certain ways. You can mix and match. So I will create collection, for example, of patches. Or if I have to create a collection of pieces, I'll basically create pieces under an inspiration and theme, but within the idea that I have, which is basically the reconstruction, deconstruction, and creating something new from something that it was vintage.
It's well, you're absolutely right though, because you know there is a lot of clothing out there, and when you actually you know too many br there's a lot of brands out there, amazing brands out there.
If you actually are trying to invest money, you basically have to put the money up front and hoping that people are going to buy. What if they don't buy? Right?
Exactly. I mean, that's why I
Yeah,
think at the
so.
moment, I mean, I'm sure in in the States it's the same thing, because in there are a lot of people who are doing made to order now. So a lot of small brands are starting to do that, and it works. It's working quite well. And you realize that, you know, they're made better, that you know, it's a smaller brand, smaller corporation, you know, they make it very well. They're not making hundreds and hundreds. It's very, very limited quantity, and it's working for a lot of the brands. And you think, yeah, it's absolutely great that how everyone's thinking that way. Is it this in US as well, like made to order? Do you
I
come
haven't
across?
seen as much. I mean,
Okay.
I feel that there is a current going that way.
Yeah.
It's New York. It's corporation after corporation.
Yeah, of course.
So it's the small David, fighting against the big Goliath.
Yeah. But do you see a lot of people, do you see a lot of people saying to you, oh, sustainable, we want it to be ethical, sustainable? Do they come to you and say, look, I don't want to buy it. I just need you to alter this, alter that for me, because I really do not want to buy anything new.
100% of the times, yes,
Right,
100% of
okay.
the times.
Okay.
And going with that, you know, the name of the company is Raw Meat and Repair Company, because obviously I'm very fond with repairing and reconstructing pieces. But, you know, the Raw Meat stands for the brand name. So we're a company that always, I say that, you know, this is stage one is and repair company, but eventually will come Raw Meat, which basically is, you know, the whole combination of custom, bespoke, and repair within the realms of what I explained to you when it comes to clothing and made-to-measure pieces for my clients.
So how long does it take you to repair something, depending on what repair is required? But how long would you take on a cut piece? What's your estimate timing for a piece?
Well, I have a 2-week turnaround time, right?
Okay.
But that's kind of like the standard turnaround for something that is standard and regular, like, you know, blown up crotch, for example, in your pair of jeans that I could reweave effectively. That's 2 weeks. But, you know, there are many projects that require time, and that's how I try to educate and make understand my clients.
Right.
You know, you have to if you want to have an optimal and a perfect product, then you have to give me some time to assess the situation.
Sure.
You know, you have to, especially with pieces like the ones we spoke before. You have to let me talk to your garment to see how this works. How am I going to approach and tackle the issues in order to recreate and bring back your garment? It all depends, you know.
Yeah.
2 weeks, it could take 2 weeks. I still have a jacket that I haven't finished, and it's 6 months.
Wow.
But that creates, but that's only because I get allowance from the client.
Right, okay. Wow. 6 months. Wow, that's a long time. Well, it's not a long time, but I'm just saying, in a sense, that must be some piece of clothing to repair to, is it not, for 6 months? What's
wrong
with it?
This, the one that I'm talking about, 6 months, is basically a museum piece, literally, of this customer who acquired this French jacket from, I think it was the 40s.
Okay.
So it was kind of like half in shambles.
Right.
Yeah, half in shambles, and I basically started reconstructing as much as I could, salvage pieces, original hardware, as much as I could.
Yeah.
Then I kept replacing panels, and I had to replace linings. Then he wanted to cast the original buttons for the jacket.
Wow.
So at this moment, I'm waiting for him to give me the buttons so I can sew them back, because he wanted to cast them as the jacket originally had. And he had like one or two buttons. So basically, he asked me to wait for him until he gets those buttons casted. So
that's a lot of work.
Yeah. No, there is a lot of work done, but you know that's the kind of a service I provide. You know, I offer my 1000% warranty, and I'm always behind every project just to make sure that, you know, it's the satisfaction, is my reputation on the line, and
of
I want
course.
To make sure that, you know,
Absolutely.
Everybody is very happy
Absolutely.
With the work done.
Was it very difficult starting it all up, though? Like, you know how you said, oh, my God, last year, Samila, I was in, you know, in such a position that hopefully this year it is a different position. It's a better position.
Yeah. I mean, I have tons of optimism, and I you know, I have every day a lot of magnesium to boost my optimism. you could get depressed very easily in New York.
I can imagine.
This is a lot. This city is a meat grinder. This city could put you down very fast, you know, if you don't have a strong base, foundation.
Yeah.
So just to start with, you know, rent, transportation is relentless, and you can't get away from it. Just to do the first thing, you know, rent itself is extremely expensive.
Wow.
And, you know, you could be depressed because you're not able to pay the rent, and you can face eviction at any given moment. Nothing is secure. There is no security in any job. And, you know, when I took this opportunity to create something, I had basically, it was like probably $20,000 that I invested in a Russian roulette. Because I believed that there was a chance, and I had a shot finally on something after, like, you know, many endeavors throughout my life that I did.
Yeah.
I said, you know, okay, I've done my legwork throughout these years. I see an opportunity here. I think that this is something that, you know, I can confidently say that has a shot. That I'm going to work, I worked all my life. That I'm going to suffer, I suffer all my life, you know. But I feel like, you know, I give myself 3 years.
Okay.
And, you know, my first year, out of my 100% goal that I want, my first year, basically, I got it to 35% of my goal. So it's not so bad.
Not so bad at all.
Yeah. Now, this year, 2024, it started very well. Because, you know, I have a little better reputation, a little more known than last year. And therefore, you know, before talking to you, I had already 3 customers who came over, who booked their appointments. And, you know, I just got their garments, I assessed them. And, you know, after this, I'll have another 2 more appointments. So my January is better than my last January, than 2023.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Not so bad.
Not so bad at all, Raphael. Wow. Congratulations. I mean, you've stuck with it, though. I mean, you are simply passionate about it, though. You're very passionate about it.
You have to like it. I mean, it's like I see you, like, talking with so much passion, and, you know, you have, like, way of, like, get to your guest, and you just have, I don't know, it's the way you conduct yourself that makes it so interesting and friendly, this conversation. I feel like it has to be the same flow with your clients, you know. There has to be it's not just a transaction.
No.
You're dealing with time bombs.
Yeah.
There is no price for anything. If I screw it up, the amount of money is unquantifiable. How could you quantify, the price of something that is, you know, that you are emotionally connected, linked to it.
Exactly.
So that's how I take it. I take it with a lot of respect, with a lot of care, with, you know, keeping in mind that the heritage and the memories and all that. I mean, that's my work. That's why I'm passionate, you know, because I understand. I understand that, and I try to elevate clothing.
So, who's your favorite menswear brand out there? Who do you like? Anyone in the, I mean, we're talking about anyone in the world of menswear. Who would you say that's the particular brand? I really love their work. Or designer, yeah.
Well, there have been a lot of designers, names that have always inspired me because of how challenging their vision was and how they achieved it. You know, one of them was, for example, Alexander McQueen.
Of course, yeah.
What a force! Yeah, what a creative force!
Yeah, amazing creator. Amazing.
It's a loss. It's a loss to have
him. Huge loss.
Gone, because, you know. I find him extremely mesmerizing. You know, before that, you know, I was crazy about Jean-Paul Gaultier, you know, Jean Galliano.
Yeah, Vivienne Westwood.
Yeah, Westwood. You know, don't forget that. I'm super, you know, one of the reasons I have that safety pin in my logo is because, you know, I'm a diehard punk rock.
I thought so. I actually thought that as well, because I thought to myself, I bet you any money he absolutely is inspired by Vivienne Westwood as well.
Yes, Vivienne. I mean, imagine. I mean, how.
I know.
You know, I dream one day to eventually, like, you know, have an archive with every single one of their pieces. Hussein Chalayan, another guy who actually, like, blows my mind when it comes to you know, to his designs, to the way he approaches a structure, you know. And that is basically people that I know, let's say Britain, in New York, in America. You have, for example, Tom Brown, or you have Jeremy Scott.
Yeah.
You know, people that, you know, creative, funky, but they put together, I mean, one of my dreams is to have this collection that basically marries Tom Brown and Jeremy Scott, you know. I love that idea, you know. Of course, we cannot dismiss, you know, the influence and the work of Ralph Lauren, you know. Yeah, I always look at it and I always think, you know, I'm creating and preparing my own empire, and I reflect on Ralph Lauren all the time. If I want to do something, I'll create a division and I'll make another brand, a sub brand, but, you know, going within the same road. That people inspire me. And we talk about Japanese, for example.
Oh God, I love the Japanese.
That's exactly. Yeah. See,
Some of the Japanese designers, you know, are just Isamiyaki, incredible.
Joji Yamamoto.
When I first saw Isamiyaki's stuff, I was absolutely blown away. When I remember when I was a student and I saw Isamiyaki's stuff, I just fell in love with his creation from there onwards. And I've never, ever stopped loving what he used to do. It's the most amazing inspirational designer. It's when you look at their work and you see what they've created, and you just think, wow, you know, no words can actually put it in that kind of phrase what you think of their work, you know, because there's nothing, you know. It's incredible with some of these designers. And you actually, when you look at their work, you know, the only thing I wish I actually, at the very beginning of the podcast, I've always wanted to interview Vivienne Westwood, and I really wish I actually persuaded it at the very beginning, because I'm sure she would have loved to come on it. But it would have been a great, great conversation with her. But
I would have put that podcast 24/7 until I remember every single word. I mean, imagine what Vivienne had to say to you in every single of your questions. I mean, there is so much that she could.
Vivienne Westwood. I think once I was told that I designed like a cross between Vivienne Westwood and Paul Smith. I remember someone saying that to me, and I'm just thinking, that's a great combination, you know, going absolutely absolutely to a point where you're so inspired to create something absolutely out of it, and then you tame yourself like how he does. And it's like, wow, I didn't realize I was one of those designers that I can create like Vivienne Westwood and Paul Smith. It's a massive compliment, massive. But you're right. These designers are absolutely amazing designers. Amazing designers.
I think the conductor line and within all of this is basically the creativity behind them, but also the challenge to the status quo. Yeah. You know, on every single statement, which, you know, aligns very much with me when I try to save something. The line conductor among all these designers are, you know, is obviously creativity, but most importantly, you know, the challenge to the staff school that you usually get in the industry, you know. It's impossible. It's possible. You have to figure it out and find a way to make it work.
I always say, if there's a will, there's a way. 100%. You know, that saying when everybody used to say, if you've got the will, you've got a way. And it's true, you know, if you've got the will, you've got a way. And if you love something so much and you're passionate about it, I always say never give it up without a fight. And it's not a fight. It's a fight against what you're trying to create. And it's a great fight because it makes you. It won't break you. So you think it's breaking you, but it's not. It's actually making you. That's what I say.
Oh, yeah. You're preaching to the right choir because, you know, I would already, and, you know, people come to New York with a lot of dreams.
Yeah.
And the dreams are shattered sometimes, and you leave New York very, very traumatized.
Yeah. On the last note, last thing I want to ask you, would you say it's been worth it? I know it's very early stages, but has it been worth the passion putting into this business?
It is worth it.
Yeah.
It is worth it. It is worth it because, you know, think about if you actually have, I'm not sure if you're a mom or not, but I feel like my workshop is like my baby.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. Yeah.
And you know, I basically sleep 4 hours a day. I went to sleep at 3 a.m. today, and I woke up at 7:30 because I had a customer by 8:30.
Right. Okay.
You know, yeah. And I go to sleep very happy, you know, looking forward for the challenges of the next day. It's not easy, but you know, who raising a kid is not an easy task. You learn on the every day. You try to make less mistakes. I don't get to be undermined or underestimated because, you know, I'm creating my own path. I'm making my own journey. So that's how I see it. I'm no longer underestimated by any corporation or anybody who's telling me that, you know, your work is not good enough. And if it's not good enough, then I'll figure it out my own way, myself, you know. But so far, I think I'm doing okay.
And on that note, Raphael, I'd just like to say thank you so much for coming on to Menswear by Woman podcast. It's been an absolute honor and amazing to have you on board. Absolutely lovely to have you on board. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarmila. Thank you very much. I'm sorry if I spoke too much.
No, you didn't. And don't ever apologize for speaking too much. Never, you know, ever. Especially on this podcast, we like people to speak a lot.
Listen, one day you're gonna come over to this, to Brooklyn. We'll have a beautiful glass of wine together, and we'll keep talking.
Yeah, fantastic. You're on. I'm flying out soon. So speak to you soon. Thank you very much, Raphael. Absolutely great. Thank you, and carry on doing what you're doing. It's amazing, and the whole passion that you have for your business and for what you're doing, creating, it's absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.